Today, what the Fed? The DFA Daily to the 19th of April 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Over the last couple of days, I have described the actions of the Federal Reserve as they lift their balance sheet to unprecedented levels. And I've received a number of questions from viewers saying, how does what they do flow into the real economy? And why am I so concerned about what's going on? Well, I want to take that discussion a bit further today and look specifically at the various programs that they've announced in the last month or so, because there is an unprecedented amount of activity underway to mitigate the effects of COVID. And of course, they continually stress that this is to the benefit of US households and businesses, although, frankly, I doubt it. These measures include cutting the Fed's policy rate to the zero lower bound, purchasing treasury and mortgage-backed securities to promote market functioning, and establishing several liquidity and credit facilities. As the social distancing measures were introduced, firms in the transportation, retail, and services sectors were especially affected, but productivity suffered more generally as employees got sick and supply chains were disrupted. Many individuals lost their jobs, were forced to reduce spending, and faced financial hardship. In the US in particular, initial claims, which reflect the number of workers filing for unemployment insurance for the first time, got to more than 20 million. And as revenues plummeted and firms ran low on cash, their borrowing needs increased. Firms drew down their lines of credit from banks and attempted to borrow in short-term funding markets. Unusually high funding needs and the pullback by key suppliers of short-term funds, such as prime money market funds, led to higher rates and stressed markets, prompting the Fed to step in. Costs for borrowing longer term in corporate bond markets also increased markedly, especially for lower rated issuers and issuers directly affected by social distancing measures. Global asset prices dropped, the S&P 500 index declined steeply, triggering market-wide circuit breakers that halted trading three times in March. And by March the 23rd, the stock market had fallen 34% from its February 2020 high. Investors sought the safety of US government bonds, pushing yields to record lows. And measures of implied volatility rose sharply, indicating high uncertainty about the future. And typical relationships in financial markets broke down, such as those between stock prices and treasury yields. The Fed employed both conventional and unconventional policy tools to address the economic and financial disruptions caused by the pandemic. The Financial Open Market Committee, the FOMC, quickly cut the target range for the federal fund rate to zero lower bound, citing risks to economic activity from the virus. The FOMC lowered the target range by 50 basis points on March the 3rd and by an additional 100 basis points on March the 15th. Both changes occurred between scheduled meetings, with the latter being the first on a weekend since the policy of announcing rate changes started back in 1994. Reductions in the Fed's policy rate tend to lower interest rates more broadly, such as for mortgage rates, spurring borrowing and spending by both consumers and businesses. Moreover, to address disruptions in funding markets, the Fed increased the size in terms of its repo operations starting on March the 9th. And on March the 15th, the FOMC reaffirmed the role of its repos in supporting the smooth functioning of short-term US dollar funding markets. The FOMC also announced on March the 15th that it would use its full range of tools to support the flow of credit to households and businesses. In particular, the FOMC said it would increase its holdings of Treasury securities and agency mortgage-backed securities by at least $500 billion and $200 billion respectively to support the smooth functioning of financial markets. After buying $340 billion in securities in the week of March the 15th, the FOMC announced on March the 23rd that it would also continue to purchase treasury securities and agency mortgage-backed securities in the amounts needed to support market functioning and the effective transmission of monetary policy, and that it would include purchases of agency commercial mortgage-backed securities in its agency MBS purchases. And then the Fed announced related measures on March the 15th to support the credit needs of households and businesses. And the Fed encouraged depository institutions to borrow from the discount window by lowering the primary credit rate, that's the discount window borrowing rate for banks, by 150 basis points, including a 50 basis point narrowing relative to the Fed funds rate. And the Fed further supported lending by reducing reserve requirements to zero and by encouraging the use of intraday credit extended by reserve banks for facilitating payments. And the Fed also took a number of supervisory and regulatory actions in recent weeks to support financial institutions and the economy. It temporarily relaxed the leverage ratio that large and community banks have to maintain. It encouraged banks to use their capital and liquidity buffers to lend to households and businesses in a safe and sound manner. And it offered regulatory reporting relief to small financial institutions. And the Fed also encouraged banks, savings associations and credit unions to offer responsible small dollar loans to consumers and small business and to work constructively with borrowers affected by the virus. And then in addition, the Fed established a series of funding and liquidity facilities to promote the smooth functioning of financial markets and the flow of credit in the economy. Two facilities were designed to support credit to large employers so that they're able to maintain their business operations and capacity. That's the PMCCF and the SMCCF. We'll discuss those in more detail in a moment. And then there were three additional facilities supporting credit to small and medium businesses through new and expanded loans, enabling employers to maintain payroll and employees, the MSNLF and the MSELF and the PPPLF. And three other facilities aim to mitigate disruptions in short and medium-term markets that support credit provisions to individuals and businesses, the CPFF, the MMLF, and the TALF. And the Municipal Liquidity Facility purchases loans from state and local governments to help them manage cash flow pressures. And the Primary Dealer Credit Facility provides funding to primary dealers to support market liquidity and functioning. Most of these facilities are backed by equity investments or credit protection from the US Department of the Treasury, using funds appropriated by Congress under the Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security Act, the CARES Act. Given the global nature of the pandemic, the market for borrowing US dollars, which are widely used in international transactions, was also disrupted. The Fed has standing dollar liquidity arrangements, swap lines, with five foreign central banks that allowed the latter to lend US dollars to banks and firms in their own countries. And to further improve the functioning of US dollar funding markets, the Fed announced on March the 19th temporary swap lines with nine additional central banks. Moreover, the Fed announced on March the 31st the launch of a new facility, the FIMA repo facility, to allow foreign central banks to raise US dollars against their holdings of US Treasury securities at the Fed. This arrangement reduces foreign central banks' incentive to sell US Treasuries in the open market. Now let's look at those programs in a bit more detail. And to do that, let's look first at the main actors on the Fed stage. Well as the Fed itself, we have primary dealers, which are perhaps umbrella banks that interact through the various markets, and we have corporations, and we have financial institutions, money market funds and hedge funds, all of whom interact through the stock market, the corporate bond market, the corporate commercial paper market, and of course the repo market. Then we have states and local government authorities, and then retail banks, including households and businesses who interact through the financial system via the retail banks. And then we have other central banks around the world who in turn connect through to overseas corporates. So it's a pretty broad field of play. Now I'm going to look at each of these facilities in a bit more detail. The first one is the CPFF, or the Commercial Paper Funding Facility, which provides the enhancement of liquidity of the commercial paper market by providing a liquidity backstop to US issuers of commercial paper. Commercial paper are short-term loans to corporations, but now essentially they'll be propped up and pay very low rates by taking funds via the Fed. So this is effectively a direct bailout by the Fed of corporates. The next is the PDCF, or the Primary Dealer Credit Facility. and this provides funding to primary dealers to support market liquidity functioning and facilitate credit availability to business and households. Now, these are the major international banks. And now these primary dealers can sell all types of collateral, including, I would add, equities. Yes, the Fed is already indirectly buying stocks, plus junk bonds, and other forms of securities, all taken on as assets on the Fed's balance sheet in return for 90-day loans. This, by the way, is a big deal, and many people have missed the fact that indirectly the Fed is already buying stocks. The next one is the MMLF, which is the Money Market Mutual Liquidity Facility. And this assists money market funds in meeting demands for redemptions by households and other investors, enhancing credit provision to the broader economy. So money market funds, mutual funds if you like, can get their liquidity from the Fed to meet redemptions. They can borrow from the Fed at extremely cheap rates, which means that they can meet the liquidity calls on their funds no problem without necessarily having to sell commercial paper in the open market. So once again, the Fed is supporting that sector of the financial system too. The next one is the Primary Market Corporate Credit Facility, the PMCCF, which supports credit to large employers so that they are better able to maintain business operations and capacity. And basically, this means buying primary corporate debt via a special purpose vehicle, I might add. There is no law that prevents the Federal Reserve going round the restrictions that they might otherwise face by creating these special operating companies. So while some people say that there is a line in the sand which the Fed can't cross, the fact is they've already crossed it. And that is followed by the Secondary Market Corporate Credit Facility, the SMCCF, which, guess what, is providing the same but buying existing securities in the current secondary markets, again, to provide more liquidity to the corporate section. This is buying existing corporate debt. And for this, the Fed is using a private corporation, BlackRock. And BlackRock essentially is buying whatever bonds they want to buy. And the point there is that BlackRock owns a whole series of bond funds, so they could be seen as having a direct conflict of interest where they might direct those purchases to bonds they prefer to hold. There is very little transparency here, I'm afraid, and I'm very concerned about some of the implications of this tie-up between the Fed and BlackRock. Effectively, BlackRock can buy whatever they want. Now, the next facility is the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, or the TALF, and this is to enable the issuance of asset-backed securities backed by student loans, auto loans, credit card loans, loans guaranteed by the Small Business Administration, and certain other assets to support the flow of credit to consumers and businesses. And this essentially allows investors, mainly banks, to buy existing loan portfolios and flow those funds on to the retail bank so that they can lend more. Now we move on to the Main Street loans, and there are two, the Main Street New Loan Facility and the Mainstream Expanded Loan Facility, both of which are designed to enhance support for small and mid-sized businesses through loans to companies employing up to 10,000 workers or with less than $2.5 billion in revenues. This is targeting small and mid-sized companies, but they have to go to their local banks to get loans. And that could be a bridge lending facility or some other form of loans. All those facilities provided, of course, by the retail banks. And next, we have the Paycheck Protection Program Lending Facility, the PPPLF, which supplies liquidity to participating financial institutions to bolster the effectiveness of the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program. So this effectively allows small and mid-sized firms to borrow. But the question is, will banks do due diligence on these propositions? And will firms simply borrow, bearing in mind that the whole thing is being backstopped by the Fed? So essentially, you could argue that there is a risk of moral hazard here. Then we turn to the Municipal Liquidity Facility, which is the purchase of short-term notes from state and local governments to help them better manage cash flow pressures, essentially bailing out state and local governments. And then just to complete the picture, we have the FIMA, F-I-M-A, repo facility, which allows foreign central banks to raise US dollars against their holdings of US Treasury securities at the Fed. So this arrangement reduces foreign central banks' incentives to sell US Treasuries in the open market. And it's about creating another repo market outside US-denominated debt. And that's important because essentially it allows the Fed to control the US dollar rates and acquire treasuries rather than selling to keep rates low. And then, of course, we also have the US swap facility, which are facilities run by the Fed to central banks in other locations to allow the flow of dollars to feed on to corporate bonds in other countries, and that in turn helps to keep the US dollar rate under control. So if you stand back and think about all of this, you have to say that the bulk of the support that I've gone through is supporting the financial system. It's supporting large corporates. It's supporting the financial sector, including hedge funds and money market funds and other financial institutions. And it's supporting the primary dealers. And essentially, the Fed has the facility to be able to buy pretty much any assets it wants. Now, you can ask another question, and that is, how much supervision is there of their activities? And the answer is not very much at all. They do provide some reporting, but as I've demonstrated, it's pretty complicated and it's full of alphabet soups. And even some of the operations like what BlackRock is doing, for example, and what is done with the international swap feeds are pretty undisclosed. And I have to say that if I stand back and think about the impact on households and businesses, the total amounts being lent for that sector of the economy, directly or indirectly, pales into insignificance relative to the total amount of funds that are being directed at the big end of town. And I conclude, as I've done in my last couple of shows, with this comment. The Fed is supporting the big end of town. The Fed is supporting the financial sector and the financial plumbing. But whether it is doing a good enough job with households and businesses, I have a big question mark over. To my mind, this is actually money being directed in the wrong place for the benefit of normal households and normal businesses. But on the other hand, if you see the Fed as fundamentally supporting the financial system and the financial sector, then it's doing precisely what you expect. In other words, the Fed is looking after its own once again. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.